In some cases, it's not too much he prevents them, as he doesn't help them. He doesn't help them, then the odds are against them. Because evil in this world holds the dominant position. So, if God doesn't equal it out, it's very, very difficult. Maral says that when the Gemara says that when David HaMelech had this incident with Bathsheba, so in reality David HaMelech by all measure was way beyond this act, but he's only way beyond this act with the regular assistance that the Rebbe Shlomo provides for people in this world to make choices to reject evil. But in this case, it's not like he deprived them of his ability to do so, but he didn't help them. He just removed his assistance. And by removing his assistance, he makes it nearly impossible, not impossible, but nearly impossible for a person to navigate, because evil has the dominant. It's impossible, but it's close to impossible. Moses says that Hashem says that were it not for the fact that Hashem intervenes to assist people after they've made their choice, that they wouldn't be able to carry it out. So we make a choice in a context where we have an even balance, but to carry it out, we need Hashem's help. The Maral said that's the meaning in the Gemara, that the generation that was complicit in the Chet HaEgel, that they were way beyond that, but that Hashem didn't help them, and that's what happened to David HaMelech. Desna speaks about the Sinikudas HaBechira. He said that everybody's battle lines are in a different place, and that one person's Nikudas HaBechira may be for another person not within the realm of consideration in either direction. So, for example, someone who may grow up under very, very abusive or very corrupt influences. So, even though that's all that they've been exposed to, that doesn't mean that they don't have Nekudas HaBechira. It just means that the Nekudas HaBechira is all the way at one end of the spectrum, such that the choice may be, do I murder him or do I compromise him? Do I steal or do I not steal? It may be the kind of thing which for a second person, it's just unthinkable. But that's because every person in Kudas HaBechira is in a different place. So for Moshe Rabbeinu, the Kudas HaBechira was consideration about hitting the rock or not hitting the rock. And for us, it would not come into the realm of choice of wondering what we're supposed to be doing under those circumstances, because that's way beyond us. The story they say that he was going to Tashlich, and on the way to Tashlich, he met the Rebbe coming back from Tashlich. There was Rebbe Gamil. Rebbe Gamil said to him, "Naftali, where are you going?" So he said, "The Rebbe just threw away his sins. I'm going to collect them, because for me, the Rebbe's sins are mitzvahs." And what he was saying is that the kind of thing that the Rebbe demanded of himself was so beyond him that for him, those kinds of things would be a big achievement. So, the Nekudas HaBechira is different. Now, for Klal Yisrael, the Nekudas HaBechira is a meaningful Bechira. Paro was a Rasha. So the question for Paro was not even an issue of doing a mitzvah or not doing a mitzvah. The question is, was the Rebbe Shlomo had given him an ultimatum, was he such a Rasha that he was going to ignore that ultimatum and defy HaKadosh Baruch Hu? So it became increasingly difficult for him to defy HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Hashem hardened his heart. I believe it's Ramban who says he hardened his heart to bring him back to a place where he could have an equal choice even in the face of such explicit miracle. That was the Hanim. That was not to change his bechira, but it was to bring him back to a place where when he exercised his choice, it would be consistent with his wickedness, because he was a wicked person. But he had to bring back the balance with it. Here were all of these miracles. How can anybody be so defiant when it's so clear that you're up against the bigger power? So Hashem hardened his heart to bring him back, to restore the even possibility for choice. There's in the second pasuk over here, he says, I want to do these miracles. Why? In order that you may relate or tell in the ears of your children and your children's children how I played with Egypt and the wonders that I, the signs that I did in their midst. Yidatim ki ani Hashem, you will know that I am Hashem. So there's several interesting comments. In the Devarim, it talks about remembering what happened at Sinai and relating it, passing it on. So the pasuk there says, yeah, so here it says, it's in Devarim chapter 4, pasuk 9. Only be very watchful, and your soul should be very careful, lest you forget the things which your eyes saw, referring to Har Sinai, unless you turn them away from your heart all the days of your life, and you shall make them known to your children and your children's children the day that you stood before your God in Horeb. So on that post, you shall make it known to your children and your children's children. The Gemara says that a person who teaches his grandchildren Torah, it's as though they received it from Har Sinai. And here you also have in the second pasuk, in order that you will tell it, that you will relate it in the ears of your children and your children's children. You see that the Torah somehow is trying to tell us something about the fact that there is something special about teaching your grandchildren or telling your grandchildren stories. So I think that there are several messages here. One message is that if a person has not transmitted Torah to his own children in a positive way, in a way in which the children related to this joyously, those children, to take the extreme, if one's children receive Torah in a burdensome way, in a negative way, they will not allow their parents to try to influence their children because they don't want that passed on. So what the Torah may be telling us is that if one's children turn their own children over to their parents so that they'll tell them the story or that they'll teach them about how Sinai, it's an indication that they've transmitted it effectively. So the message is, there is a litmus test here. If you are in a position where you can teach, or you can tell stories to your grandchildren, it's a sign that this is a legitimate transmission, that it's come down the right way. That's one approach. A second approach occurs to me, that when the Torah is telling us, whether it's the story of the Exodus or the story of Moses and Sinai, that there is a certain authenticity and a certain depth and a certain integrity that grandchildren receive from grandparents, which is not necessarily there by parents, because whenever parents are communicating the obligation to Torah, or wherever they're trying to tell the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim, in a certain sense, children understand that it's a test of their parents' parenting. In other words, when parents are trying to communicate what happened at Har Sinai or whatever, they're trying to shape the kids. And they're shaping the children is a reflection on them. And in a very subtle way, kids understand that what's happening between them and their parents is a measure of their parents' success as parents, and that to some extent affects the message. Grandparents don't have that agenda. So when grandparents are transmitting this information, they're not getting any report cards anymore. So it gets transmitted in a much purer way. The children don't hear in it, don't feel in it. The parents,
this is the preventative for the darkness occurring to the truth. Having this go on.
It's the only. Because otherwise, just say in order that you tell the story in the ears of your children, finish it. The addition of telling the story to your grandchildren. In the case of Matan Torah, what happened at Sinai, that the grandparent has an obligation because it's transmitted differently. There's a deeper ring to it. It resonates. What do we call it? Choices and Zadies.